Excision number 22345, reel 9.
Major Perkin, reel 9. You've described doing the reconnaissance of the guard's position before you took it over. How did the relief go?
Well, I don't remember. We took over, and there was a bit of division in front of us, new one from England. And they were holding the line in front of us. We were in reserves. Then one day, we suddenly had a panic station, and we saw these business troops all retiring to our lines. And they started our inner troops to get out. They said, the Germans are coming. And fortunately, our old hands, and they sat firm, and let the business troops through, and it all was over. The Germans got the front line, which was held by Gurkhas as well, and that was the end of it. The Germans retreated, and we took over then.
How far were your positions from the front line positions held by the Gurkhas?
I think it was definitely north of our left hand side, it was level on top. I think it was they had been patrolling. One officer called Pat Stubbs, he was on to patrol, and he got shot through the belt of bullets through his stomach. He managed to call back. I knew him well at Sandhurst, and he was also well and I was in Malaya, in them. He got out to our lines, how, I don't know, with very bad wounded, and I believe he was out or not at all. He certainly couldn't take out of war. Then, I don't remember too much. Then one day, the colonel called us, company commanders forward, and said that we had to put in an attack that night on the ridge in front of us, a ridge called Tobaga, the T-E-B-A-D-D-A, Tobaga Peter. They start with trying to the Germans in trench. And in front of it, they'd like, they minefield. And also they had searchlights to stand on the no-land and in the scene. When we were given our order that night, that day, two of us, my company and C company under Popple. Sounds dramatic now, but fact remains, we looked at each other and we knew that was the end of it, because we never got anywhere with that sense of position.
What was the distance over which you had to advance to launch the attack?
We had to advance across a valley of probably about 200 yards. But the German minefield at the bottom room. And so we got ourselves ready. We had a closer look at the at daytime, and we didn't like what we saw at all. Then I came, and just after dark, we were going to talk about midnight. A message came through to cancel it. Great release. Next morning, dawn, we were told that it's on again. We're going to start that then. Once we got ready, and then that night, once again, it was cancelled. The background to all this was, at this time, the First Army was advancing along the North African coast from Algiers towards Tunis itself. They'd been held up and couldn't, I don't know what it was, but they couldn't get any further. So the First Army commander asked General Montgomery, if he could have some assistance. And Montgomery said, you could have our two best divisions, the 4th Division and the 1st, 7th Army Division. Well known as the Desert Rats.
What did you feel about being transferred to 1st Army from 8th Army?
Maybe I do the worry at that stage. I didn't feel any fear that these happened in war. Later, you hear a bit more about it. So, we were on the 8th coast of Tunis, and we had to go right the way down to the north coast. And not very few roads up towards a place called Medjed El Bab, via a town called Le Kef.
How did you make the journey? Were you in motor transport?
Motor transport, very, very old stuff. We'd all be carried out in a seminar right away to the sea, 5,000 miles across the North Africa. We had no lights on our vehicles and very little super stuff at all.
Were you travelling by day or were you travelling by night as well?
It had to be a strictly move, and two divisions had to get down to the north coast to an 8th Army during the night. It was an impossible job, but it was done.
What was the terrain like? You said there were very few roads on your route. What was the ground?
Hilly and mostly hilly. Tracks more than anything, with one road to a place called Le Kef. We call the road about the equivalent of a sea car for English. How bad they were. If there wasn't, it mostly went surface. We got. How we got that, I would never know.
Were you having to navigate?
No, I wasn't got involved in this. No, I wasn't. I may have been. No, I didn't navigate it. I followed. I can't remember who organized it.
So you were just in the column that went?
In the column. And traveling in the night. And just a small incident. When we got to the Cape, at the dawn. And we met for the first time British troops from the First Army. They were a massive dust, all the brand new vehicles and everything. Our Royal Sussex in our brigade stopped in a town square or somewhere, saw the British troop and said, "Is it true you get chocolate and beer and cigarettes in your accident?" And there's Mrs. Troop saying that, "Yes, that's true, but you have to earn it first." Very good. He's brought such a path out of it. He was fighting in the sheriff, maybe. Not at all. Anyway, sorted out with MPs and carry on. And we arrived. I don't remember quite what happened. We got into the area behind the First Army, where I don't remember too much, except probably the next day we were called for all the company commander who were going to take part in this battle to meet tank commanders in the over the area. There we did, and the plan was. I still have maps of it. It's going to be a leap-robbing exercise.
Do you know who the armoured units were that you were working with?
7th Army.
7th Army. So they're people you already knew.
Yes. And we've been playing together in the Western Desert for 3 years.
Yes.
And Anyway, the attack was being on a very competitive small front, with one company, infantry company, leaping, taking one, leapfrogging over the other, and on and on.
How long were these bounds then? How far would you go before someone would leapfrog through?
Probably about a couple of hundred yards, 50 yards. I know I was the last of all.
So you were the reserve company, effectively?
Right, reserve for seven, yes. And as the last company all come in.
Yes.
And in front of our attack, our gunners, we brought our own gunners through with us, and one gunman insisted if he can do the attack, he had the first people saw. And it's a very good artillery program later on. Getting I can't describe it. It's a creaking barrels. And it was certainly, very close behind it.
What sort of lifts were they doing then? How?
Oh, 100 yards.
100 yards.
We had to go very, very slowly. We walked. One mile an hour, if that. And we practiced this then way back in the desert, and not nice.
What was the ground like over which you were doing this?
Rolling.
Rolling country. Was there any cover in it, any vegetation?
No, I don't know about that. Not hardly any. Going back here, if I may, just before the attack, we were all together and waiting to talk to the attack officers. And I can't remember, maybe General Anderson, who commanded the First Army. I think it's him, I don't know. He came up to see us. We got there. He saw us all in 8th Army. Dressed, you got it. Also, we wore any wanted. I have that chocolate coloured trousers come out. We all wore what we wanted. No discipline at all for officers. And he remarked this to our division commander, to General Tuka, who turned around to him and said, "If I saw two officers dressed as lights, one of them had to go."
Did that apply to the soldiers as well?
No. Well, they wanted to, No.
They had to retain their uniform.
More or less, yes. More or less.
What sort of tanks were giving you support in this attack? Were they Shermans or?
Yes.
They weren't specific infantry tanks.
Not Grants. No. Shermans.
How were they deployed? You said that the infantry, you were going forward and leapfrogging through, yes, company by company.
Well,
were the tanks in with you, mixed in with you, or were they on one side or ahead?
Slightly behind.
The tanks were behind the infantry?
Montmorency or Ardivis or Hill, the infantry should go in first. And then the tanks come very close behind. And after that I was the last stop. I have about 6 tanks with me.
Yes.
And I got to. We could see the end of the positions, and we ran charged on them, with the tank coming up very close behind us.
How close did they get behind you when they were?
Pardon?
How close to you did the tanks get when they were coming up?
Well, they were 50 yards behind us. They were
right.
It's that. And when you got to the top, there were no enemy there. Oh. They pulled out.
What were their positions like? What sort of defences they got?
Not very, not as bad as had been a lot of the arcades, not very. I don't remember them too well. Quite salary grades, 20s.
Did they have wire or mines
No.
Just pure infantry.
Yes.
Rifle pits.
I think it's a piece of temporary stuff and that we got there. And but they really gone out. They got retreated. At that moment, they, as usual, the engineers gunners saw that their position had been taken and brought down shelter onto where I was. We all took shelter beneath our tanks, behind me, beneath the tanks. I was crouching or lying behind, under one tank, hoping it wouldn't move, and I looked down and saw my colonel in the open ground behind, in all the cell block around him. So I shouted him, he'd come up to see what was going on. I shouted him, come and join us, or me. And he did, he ran and got behind this tank with him. We crouched there. When one of the shells, I think, must have hit the side of the tank and ricocheted along and hit something and exposed it right at the back of it, just by us. Well, something was knocked off the tank and went into the colonel's knee and went right down his leg, came out by his ankle somewhere. And he was very badly with lots of blood. We put a lanyard around his leg. His jeep is out in the open. He called up his jeep. He was wheeled away and out of the war.
Do you know what happened to him later?
Yes. he was immediately out. He tried to amputate his head, but he wouldn't have it. So he kept his head. In fact, left with the rest of his life, he had to have a contractual meter put his spring the things and brought his foot up and down. But it didn't stop him. I think he went on to become either Lord Lieutenant or acting or Lord Lieutenant of Wiltshire and also Master Foxhounds. He also went back to the South Side in Tressa. Maybe the senior instructor there.
Were you all right? On that
I was
occasion?
All right. Yeah. I'm always all right. I had a couple of men wounded, I don't know how many, from the shelling, but I was all right. Then, to that, we were out of the last company all to do it. After that, all the rest went sailing through, and the cavalry said, 7 hours went straight through to Tunis, which was, probably about 4 or 5 miles away. I don't remember exactly.
What sort of vehicles were the 7th Hussars in? Were they armoured cars or were they in tanks?
Armoured cars, yes. Mm. They were the reconnaissance unit of the armoured division. 11th Hussars.
Did you manage to get into Tunis itself?
Oh yes. we went just south of Tunis in a vineyard, and from there that night. I went into Tunis. We had a pretty good party in the hotel there.
Had you seen anything of the Tunisian population up to that point?
Not really. No.
What about the French, who were present in some numbers in Tunisia?
I didn't
Tunisia?
See them. Mm. They were just us.
Just you.
I think the Americans crossed to the east somewhere, and they didn't do very well at that after that. They had a new warfare. They started lots of casualties somewhere in the south and west.
They had a bad experience at the Kasserine Pass.
Yes, yes.
Did you hear about that at the time?
Yes, we heard, but didn't know quite a bit. Just hadn't got very far. Mm. Didn't know much about it.
No. How did news get through to you? What means did you get of keeping in touch with what was going on in the wider world?
Well, I was not an intelligence officer. Intelligence officer would pick this up from various sources and put it around to the companies and all the situation report, etc.
Sit reps.
And when I was an intelligence officer, I for about a year, I did it all the time, going around trying out listen to the virus, people in the picture of what was going on in the border picture.
Were your soldiers interested in what was going on a global basis?
I think they were. The Indians were did what they did, more or less. I think he's all out there, but I always used to have a match going to tell them what happened to happen every ever. I was rather keen on mapping. I will have it there. I still am.
Was there anything like a divisional newspaper as there was in certain formations?
No, not at all. I don't recall the army one.
Yes.
There wasn't a divisional one.
So it's a case of you going and giving verbal briefings with.
Come
with a map,
yes. In the map.
Yes.
I wouldn't go to other companies and tell them what's going on. I talk to company partners, and they want to pass it on, and it's up to them.
So Tunis had fallen, and you were in a vineyard south of Tunis. What happened? Did you stay in your vineyard?
One night, I went. We arrived there. Before we get there, I was sent all down with my company to look around and see what's happening. Because there were healthy trucks, the Germans all over the place. And it was surrendering and the talons. And I was went down a deep, down a road. Went down the corner, saw a whole lot of Germans are there. I don't know, now in retrospect, I think about 1,200, 2,000 people. I wouldn't put my hand on it, but a hell of a lot in a valley. So I didn't know what they were doing. I went all very gingerly, went all, and I was greeted quite warmly by some senior officers, Italian in German, who asked me, they asked you which way to go to surrender. So I pointed away, and off they went. I didn't say any guarding.
What sort of condition were their troops in? What sort of physical condition were they in?
Pretty dejected. Italian troopers always dejected when they were. The Germans, they're surly. But these officers I talked to, they were. He was happy to remember them.
Did they say why? Did they give any reason?
No, I was just thinking of it. No. The war was over for them, anyway. And I think I'd either done one on them. It's either been taken prisoner or it's about to be taken prisoner that time. And
so
that's
think,
the end of war for them.
But Arnim, he was left behind, wasn't he? And he had to give up.
He was surrendered to the Gurkhas, actually.
Yes, because Rommel had gone, hadn't he?
Rommel had gone, yes. He had something wrong with him. And so when I went to celebrate in Tunis, I then had to hotel there. We all drink ahead of him. And I met a cousin of mine who'd come with Air Force. And they enjoyed themselves, and the orderly for the battalion arrived at about 1 o'clock in the morning. Very late, we all had a lot to drink, and told me I had to report that straight away that night to the colonel. So I went back, When I got back there, it was only about an hour's ride, not even that. The colonel told me to pack everything and go to the Gurkha battalion, pick up another officer, and go head to Tripoli. And go by plane, and I heard more about it later.
This was Tripoli in Libya.
Tripoli, Spain.
Yeah. And you weren't told why you were going?
He said something about training team. Mm. He didn't know so much. But I picked up this offer, Monty Ormsey, or the second worker, and we set off. We took at least 2 days to get this thing. We was in Delhi because we used to take a crate of wine for the bulldog, and we drank it up.
On the journey?
On the journey.
It does help to pass the time on a long journey.
Yeah, as well, yeah. When he got to Tripoli, then he got more information, but we phoned that to someone in Tunis and do a training room there. We didn't know who we were. We got on a plane, sight into one of the ends, when it caught on fire. We did a message and did a Mendali. We carried on. There.
What sort of plane was it that you were in?
It was held about, only about four, five, six. Mm-hmm. Not many. There was Monty Ormsey and myself, and a woman who was a French woman, who was the wife of some French commander. And I remember that when they had this emergency landing, we had a soft drive to get there. Yeah, very pierced and pain. She didn't at all.
Was it a single engine aircraft?
No.
Twin engine.
Twin engine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a right hand, the right hand end is supposed to be away. I don't want to. Anyway, not very important. When he got to Cairo or to it, we were told that what had happened was a brigade of soldiers from Malta. They then told the war after that date in Malta, because they couldn't get out. And they were pulled out and brought out to what you all call the Delta, by the Suez Canal, and told to train in the warfare. Yes, it was all expensive.
Do you remember which brigade it was and what units were in it?
One of the units was the Manchester Regiment.
Manchester Regiment. Yes. Mm.
I don't remember that.
Mm. What were you supposed to be teaching them?
Well,
Were you told, or was it left up to you to decide what they needed to know, or were you?
We had gunners, mm-hmm. and the chamber team. We had sappers.
Yes.
We had three instruments, including the bigger there. And we were turned into the what it was like to be in war, or to see that come again. I persisted, as usual. I was taught to do the patrolling.
Yes.
And had to get the letters on my service of patrolling. Suppers are teaching about mining, and gunners about their side of it.
Yes.
My porter is always patrolling. I always been dragged out to teach patrolling.
Did you find them good pupils when you were training them?
Yes. Mm. Yes, they had a rough time in Malta. Yes, it was. Yes.
What style of patrolling did you teach them? Because you've been saying your real speciality was the lone reconnaissance patrol by stealth, going out at night on your own and looking around.
Yes.
I mean, did they have to learn fighting patrols and other sorts of patrols?